The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Previously on the Epic Piecast.
Lugo!
Schaefer!
So we're going on vacation now.
Yay!
Awesome.
Where are we going to go? What are we going to do?
I need a break from doing this.
I need a break from all the things.
I'll tell you what we're going to do.
Ooh, yeah, tell me. What are you going to do?
We're going to go into the future.
Dude, I just told you I hate the future.
Yo, I know, but we're going to skip. There's going to be terrible things that are going to happen in January, maybe February, maybe March.
Sure.
I don't know. We're going to take a little time off from the show, and we're just going to skip everything that happens.
Okay, just skip the next couple of months?
We're just going to skip the next couple of months.
Okay.
Let's just go into the future
where
I just assume it's going to be brighter and more hopeful.
One would hope.
So anyway, you know the deal.
Yeah.
Here's the big shiny button.
Ooh, I do like the big shiny button.
I know. So you hit that button, and we will be shot into the future to our next episode.
Come here, button!
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Punch it.
We now resume our program 4 months later.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the borough of Queens, in the city of New York, this is the Epic Piecast with your hosts, Nelson Lugo and Schaefer.
What is this strange world?
Is this the future?
This is what the future looks like.
Well, it still smells the same. And...
Yeah. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Hold on.
Yeah,
I gotta look out the window.
Okay, go look out the... Yes, as you run back.
Amazingly, the city is not on fire.
Oh, really?
There is not a mushroom cloud hovering above New York. So
well,
it looks like we survived the worst of it.
I think I owe you a dollar then.
Wow, I wonder how people communicate in the future.
Well, I mean, obviously through the telekinetic implant that has been surgically implanted into their brain by Apple.
Of course,
obviously.
What if we're the last two people who still use spoken word?
What if we're technically off the grid?
What if they find out about us and they have to have us silenced to...
Can we commit crimes and no one will know who did it because we're not in the system?
Perhaps.
Let's buy some bootleg DVDs.
I wonder if movies even exist in the future.
Well, I mean, obviously, they're all like in 3D in your brain. You know, you put on a helmet and you're in the movie.
I don't think DVDs probably exist because those barely existed in the world that we just left.
That's true. They're like the laser discs of this time.
First of all, we're here right where we left off.
Yeah.
We should probably put this on tape and give this to our audience because they haven't heard us do this
stupid
thing for 4 months.
No, I guess not.
Do you remember how it goes?
You mean the top of this thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I absolutely remember. What am I, a rube?
Well, I don't know.
My first day at the fucking rodeo?
But
did I fall off the podcast truck yesterday?
Look, anybody who's anybody knows, one of the side effects of time travel is memory loss and or slight dementia.
With me, how could you really tell?
True. So I just wanted to make sure.
No, let's do this. Here we go. I'm going to do the opening exactly the way it's always been done.
All right. Terrific.
Hey there, loyal listener. Nelson Lugo here, your audio commentator for this pop culture podcast called The Epic Piecast. But those in the know it as Pop Pie Podcast. Welcome once again to the next installment of the adventures of two middle-aged men. In the second seat, we have one Schaefer the Dark Lord. Say hello, sir.
Hi, I'm Schaefer the Dark Lord.
There you are. All right, let's do this podcast thing.
Did we used to do...
That is literally word for word how it's always been done.
Cool, because I couldn't remember if we did a shitty podcast or if we were legitimate late night sex DJs.
Well, that really depends on who you ask.
I'm gonna.
I think if you ask like 12 people, you might get 12 different answers.
I would like to assume that it is the latter.
Yeah.
And that traveling through time has allowed one of my childhood dreams to come true.
Ah.
I always wanted to be the velvety voice over the airwaves while people have sex.
Well, you know what, Schaefer? Your ship has come in.
Finally.
Finally.
All these
dreams really do come true,
all
sir.
All these years of writing crappy nursery rhymes, and I finally...
Cross it off your bucket list, because you, sir, have arrived to the good times, to the sexy times, that is the Epic Podcast.
To this strange new future world of April 27th, 2017.
Exactly.
I feel like before we can sense this show, we always would typically talk about things that are going on in the world.
Sure, sure.
We should probably get caught up. We've got a lot to consume.
That's true. We need to consume a bunch of things and then come back and have an opinion.
I think it would be boring if we recorded a, you know, 37-hour episode where we just watch all of the movies and TV shows and play all the video games.
Well, would it be boring?
Yes.
Would it?
Oh, yes.
Would it?
Unquestionably.
I don't know. I think it depends on who you ask, really.
I think we should just go ahead and hit the pause button on this for a second.
Okay.
And then we'll get caught up.
Fine. No. Let's just do all the things you want to do.
That sounds terrific. That's a terrific plan.
Okay, good.
We'll take a little pause.
Yeah.
We'll get caught up, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk to our loyal listener, who possibly speaks a new language that is a combination of all the world's languages, because...
Sure, well, yeah, no, obviously.
Achieve some sort of...
Sure.
Unifying world peace at this point.
Absolutely.
And then we'll catch up on all of them.
Okay, great. Let's do that.
All right, here we go. Let me just hit this pause. What the fuck?
Okay, I want to say.
That's, did we just read, that was that a parody website where we got?
You know what?
That can't all be true.
I, for a second there, I thought you were punking me and I was reading articles off The Onion.
I thought for a second that maybe traveling through time gave you incredibly fast coding skills and you created all of this material online to trick me. But is the leader of the country starting Twitter fights with Saturday Night Live and Arnold Schwarzenegger? Did he really bomb Syria and drop the largest bomb ever on Afghanistan? And is he threatening a preemptive nuclear strike against North Korea?
Yeah, he's... Basically, Trump is the comment section of any feminist article made flesh.
Has it only been 4 months? And the people of the world have let this go on?
Well, you know, impeaching a president is not as easy as one would think.
Is this one of those dark timeline things? Did we fuck up?
Oh, dude, we are in the darkest timeline. Absolutely.
Oh, so maybe the world...
Remember that butterfly you accidentally stepped on when we were time traveling?
Accidentally, my ass, a little show-off motherfucker. Look at me, I'm too pretty. I taught him what's what.
Yeah, well, now we're in the darkest timeline, thanks to you, because... You
know, because there are consequences.
Butterfly effect.
Well, I hope the world that we left, though they will mourn our death for the rest of their lives, because
sure.
We are gone.
No, obviously.
I hope that they will... enjoy their unifying world peace and their one universal language under the rule of President Clinton, and they will live happily ever after.
And they will.
And well, I'm sorry, we'll never see them again as we sit here and just keep manually pushing the minute hand up on the atomic clock until we're all dust. Has it really only been 4 months?
Speaking of death, I played Mass Effect Andromeda.
You played that really fast during that pause.
I did. Well, you know, it was a pretty long... I mean, you know, what's hours and days to us is mere moments to our loyal listener.
True. Quick question.
Yes.
What is a Mass Effect Andromeda?
I'm so glad you asked. Mass Effect Andromeda is the fourth installment of the Mass Effect series. There were three games prior, Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, which were...
Wait, what was the third one?
Mass Effect 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go on.
It was a self-contained trilogy, an epic story of space battles and horrible evil aliens and political intrigue and...
Wasn't there a lot of mineral mining?
Oh, there was a shit ton of mineral mining.
That's
oh, yeah.
Literally everything I know about the game.
Well, boy howdy, buckle up, Buster, because I'm about to give you a crash course in Mass Effect.
Wait, to be real clear, so you're saying that the first three was a solid self-contained trilogy. It resolved... There was a through thread. It resolved all of it by the end of the third game.
Well,
okay.
It was a trilogy written as a self-contained trilogy, in that there was a beginning, middle, and end. As far as anyone at BioWare, the company that makes the game, is concerned, that story arc is done. It's over with. That character, the character of Shepard, had his or her story.
Okay.
Does
Mass Effect Androgyny, does that take place? Is it a side story in the same universe? Is it an extension with the same characters?
No. None of the characters of the original trilogy are in this new game.
Okay.
And it is a completely separate story set in that universe, in that sort of continuity, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the same technology exists, a lot of the same history. It's basically as if you went from... Oh, I'm horrible at an analogy right now. But basically, it's a completely separate story with separate people in the same universe.
Okay.
And that really has no weight or bearing on what the trilogy created, or rather what the story of the trilogy, mm-hmm. right?
Is it predominantly the same kind of storytelling style, gameplay mechanics?
For the most part, it's, you know, I think each game iterates on itself really, really well. The first game had a fantastic story, but the gameplay was kind of wonky. The second one, the mechanics of fighting and shooting became so much better, mm-hmm. and the story became so much tighter. But it took away some of the stuff that we really liked about the first one, like the exploration and discovery and stuff. And so then they brought some of that back in the third one, but because it was the final story, they really wanted to focus in on it, and the battle mechanics became even better. And then a multiplayer component was added to it, which was actually really fantastic, which was a cooperative multiplayer. You know, you and four other buddies would fight against wave after wave of enemies.
Nice.
And you had to work as a team to get through it all.
I like cooperative multiplayer so much better than competitive.
Oh my God, me too. So much, so much. And I don't know how much of this you know, but Mass Effect 3 is this really sort of contentious game because there was a huge uproar about it. And I'm not even going to get into the details of it because, quite frankly, it's boring. But I am a huge, huge, huge Mass Effect fan. And the second I learned that there was a new game coming out, I've been chomping at the bit, waiting for it. And it finally arrived. And I got to say, I like it a lot.
Wow, that sounds... There's some...
Here's the thing. I want to love it. If there was ever a fan of this series that is the target market for this game would be me. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to look past a shit ton of crap to enjoy the game.
Sure.
So I don't love it. I think my favorite is still Mass Effect 2. Mass Effect 2 is still my favorite game of the entire trilogy, of mm-hmm. the entire series, I guess, at this point. But I like Mass Effect Andromeda a lot. I mean, I don't love it. I think it has some flaws that aren't enough to break the game for me, but are enough for me to go, huh, that's an odd choice. Why would they do that? You know?
Yeah.
But I think it's the best fighting mechanics of any of the Mass Effect games. You can do so... I mean, they took away some stuff. They limited you in a way that forces you to become creative in combat, whereas before it was more pause and play. Mm-hmm. Like, you pause the game and then you select from a wheel of like a billion abilities to do whatever the fuck you needed to do. Here, you still have a billion abilities, but you're only allowed to have three at a time.
Mm-hmm. Do you not exit battle when you do those? Do you,
no.
You have to do those in real time.
In real time. Okay. You have to do the three in real time.
I'd like to speak to that a little bit later.
Oh, okay.
Go on.
But they've also, but the thing is, they also don't limit you to the class. You can be any class at any point during the game. You can switch classes on the fly. You can also switch abilities on the fly, but they all have cooldowns. So although you're stuck to only three in any given moment, you can still switch them out and still have anything you want. But there's, but you end up, as a result of that, you end up becoming really, really creative about which abilities that you have versus when you're going to use them.
How long you're going to use it.
Exactly.
How strategically you're going to use it before you extinguish it.
Exactly. And or like if you're facing different enemy types, like which ones you're going to have to switch out to defeat them better. You know, they took away your ability to control your teammates, which I think is a really dumb idea. I understand why they did it, because it would force you to pause the game to issue commands to do things, and so they wanted a more seamless combat experience.
So they're AI and
they're AI, and they're not particularly good.
Okay,
you know, basically, you can direct them to go to a certain place, you can direct them to come to rally around you, or you can direct them to fire at a specific enemy. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas before you could pause the game, select from a giant wheel of abilities. Aim it at a specific enemy and have that person attack that person over there and have the other partner attack another person over there. But the thing is, I like it. I like Mass Effect Andromeda. I like the story. I like the combat. I think I don't have a problem with the animations. A lot of people are complaining about the facial animations. I don't have a problem with it. It's a fucking video game. Hashtag video games. I think the two major beefs I have with this game is, one, I think there's like a million side quests, mm-hmm. and only about a third of them. No, even less. I would say 25% of all the side quests actually have anything to do with the main story.
Oh, hashtag Assassin's Creed.
Right. And a lot of them are kind of useless and don't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. They're just time sinks.
Exactly.
Because you like being in the world of the game and if you want to go for some sort of completion trophy.
Yeah, exactly. And, I think the main story campaign is fantastic. I think the loyalty missions for all of your party members are fantastic. Some of the side missions are okay, and some of them are meaningful to the story. And what's the other one? The script. The story is actually really good. The scripting, however, is kind of ridiculous.
What do you mean, dialogue?
Yeah. Like, some of the things that you say as the character are like, huh, that was an odd reaction to that moment. Or that was a unique choice that actor made for that particular scene.
Sure.
And that's it. That's it. I think, you know, there's just moments where I kind of roll my eyes and go, ha, video games, you know, but for the most part, I'm really enjoying it. I'm on my second playthrough.
Oh, I was just about to ask how many times you've played through it. And if a subsequent playthrough may change your mind about it, because that happens.
It does. No, it does. I thoroughly enjoy. I played the first game to, like, I think 95% completion. There were just a couple of different, there are a few side quests that I just like, I literally don't care.
Yeah.
And I'm playing the second one. I played the first one through as Sarah Ryder, as the default Sarah Ryder, because there's a brother and sister protagonist and they're twins. And there's Sarah Ryder and there's Scott Ryder. And I played the first game through as Sarah Ryder, and she and there's two options, or well, there's multiple options you can play it, but primarily you can play from your heart as an emotional feeling character, or you can play from your head as a very sort of by the book, technically minded person. So I played Sarah Ryder as more from the heart, and I'm playing Scott Ryder as more from the head, and the dialogue is completely different and their responses are completely different. I'm really enjoying it.
Oh.
First playthrough, 95% completed. Second playthrough, I'm only doing the main story quests and the loyalty missions. I could give a fuck about the side missions. And the second thing that really bothers me about the game is that none of my choices matter.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it one of those games where they like set up that there's this kind of moral choice system and they let you feel as though they kind of treat it as though you're going to have, they're going to have impacts.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, you still get to point B.
Oh, no, absolutely. And whereas in the first trilogy, like a lot of those choices mattered. a lot of those choices affected stuff that happened either in the game or in subsequent games. So a decision you made in Mass Effect 1 will come up in Mass Effect 3.
And as long as you keep your save data on your machine.
Yeah, exactly. And you will feel the benefit of the consequence of that decision in the third game, which I thought was fucking fantastic.
Huh.
This one, none of my decisions matter at all. I think there's one decision that has a consequence, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it's, you know, you're basically dealing with, you know, one of the alien races, and you either give them a thing or you don't give them a thing. And if you don't give them the thing, then like a good chunk of the side quests are no longer available to you.
Huh.
But that's it.
But that's hardly that impactful if the side quests are kind of arbitrary times things.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Huh. But overall, I really like the game. I'm maybe about halfway done with my second playthrough, which I will finish it. I'll probably play it a third time because I want to get up to level 80. Mm-hmm. And then there's probably going to be some DLC, and I'm going to get the DLC, and I'm going to play that too. You know, I really love this world. I really love the characters in this world. I really love the sociopolitical setups that they have, and it continues in this game. And I like it.
I know you've sung the praises of Mass Effect to me for as long as you've been playing them.
Have I?
Yeah. If I were, and I think I've asked you this question before, but I'm going to ask you again.
Sure.
If I were to finally say,
yeah,
fuck it, I'm going to check these games out.
Yeah.
Do I absolutely have to start with one?
No, not at all.
There's like a remastered version of the original trilogy now for this generation.
No, there isn't.
There isn't?
No.
Oh,
I think Mass Effect 3 came out for, I want to say PS3?
Yeah.
I think.
They didn't remaster those for the new console to to push Andromeda?
That's another big question mark. Like, why wouldn't you remaster them
They did that. Naughty Dog did that with Uncharted.
Exactly. Like, that's another big question mark about, like, what the hell's going on at BioWare? They're making some really dumb decisions. But anyway, Mass Effect Andromeda is available for the PS4, obviously, because I played it. I recommend it. And I think a lot of people are hating on this game, which I think are kind of really blown out of proportion. But you coming into it having no prior knowledge, you might actually love this game.
Well,
like love it.
I'm aware that there's the mining of minerals involved. So
there's
I'm
no
not
there's no mine
there.
There's no there's almost zero mining of minerals in this game.
You said you weren't going to spoil anything. I'm not going into it blind now. I know things. I have information now.
Well, I mean, you can mine if you want to.
What if I spent the whole game tensed up being like, right around this corner, I'm going to mine some minerals. And it never came. You know how disappointed, mad I beat you?
You can mine in this game. You don't need to mine in this game.
You're backtracking now. You're trying to like walk back up.
No, there is a mining mechanic, but I've never used it because I've never needed it.
All right.
In Mass Effect 2, you need it to mine. There's no way around it.
Well, I want to play Mass Effect 2 if that's your favorite.
It is, actually. Mass Effect 2 is one of my favorites.
And if it's full of mining, let's do this.
Oh my God, so much mining. So much fucking mining.
You had to pick a favorite game franchise ever.
Oh.
Would it be Mass Effect or Dragon Age?
Well, they're made by the same company.
I don't care.
They
take place in profoundly different worlds. I've never played any of them. But I know that you have committed
hundreds of hours to those
two franchises.
Yeah. Oh my God, I don't know. That's a really tough question. Because I love them for different reasons.
If you have thoughts on which franchise is preferable, Mass Effect versus Dragon Age, write to us at epicpiecast@gmail.com.
That's epicpiecast@gmail.com. I mean, they both scratch a different itch, right?
Mm-hmm. But they're similar in that they're like adventure games that have RPG elements, right?
Yes, but they work completely differently. It's apples and oranges. You can't compare the two. I mean, you can compare the two.
Cool.
I just
did.
Look, yeah, they're both RPGs. They both have like XP, and you can craft items, and you can, you know. But that's, you know, and they have side quests, but that's really about it. There's like, you know, I don't know. I like being a powerful, you know, death mage in Dragon Age, and I love being a combat engineer in Mass Effect. I don't know. I mean, I think if I was going to suggest it to you, I would say start with Mass Effect because you love science fiction.
That's not true.
That is absolutely fundamentally
true.
That
is absolutely true.
That is absolutely fun. That is fun. That is a fundamental defining quality of you.
That is patently true.
Yeah. You don't, I mean, you appreciate fantasy, but I don't think it's like, it's not your cup of tea. It's not, it wouldn't be your first choice.
No, it's not.
Yeah. So Mass Effect, I would vote play Mass Effect Andromeda. In fact, you can borrow my copy.
That wasn't even my question. I wasn't asking for a recommendation. I just wanted to know if you had to make a choice between your two true loves.
Oh my God.
I don't actually care. And if you come up with it and a definitive answer to this question, we'll slip it in as a stinger.
Okay. But yeah, that's basically, there's probably more I can talk about, but that's really been on my brain for a while now.
Well, there's one thing I wanted to say about that like echoes one of my own gaming passions, is that you talked about how this gameplay mechanic of managing an inventory of weapons and abilities has changed so that it happens in real time now.
Yeah.
So that if you're fighting a giant monster and you were like, I want to trick out this gun and take his face off, it doesn't pause the game.
No.
It just superimposes on the game while this giant monster is still barreling down on you and you have to make quick decisions. That echoes a similar change that I saw shift in my favorite gaming franchise, or one of my favorite gaming franchises many years ago, in the Resident Evil series. Resident Evil 4, which arguably still the best game in the series.
Resident Evil 4.
Resident Evil 4.
Okay.
Which was originally, like, so old, it was originally released for PS2.
Oh, dear.
It's such a good game. But it always had, like, this inventory management system.
Sure.
You could only carry X number of weapons, and when you would want to switch between them in a boss fight or something, you would pause the game, and then you would see your little suitcase, and you would move the things around. But when they came around to Resident Evil 5, they changed it and made it, like, a thing that just superimposes on the screen.
Oof.
So that hordes of zombies are still coming at you, and it created this more urgency, and it made you play more creatively.
Yeah.
It made you strategize several steps ahead, so that once, after, you know, you go into a room and all you're doing is picking up health items and you're aware that shit lurks around the corner, you can start thinking, you can start prearranging your items and be like, now when I get into that room, I'm going to take this rocket launcher that has one round left in it, and then I'm going to quickly switch to the machine gun that I have 60 rounds left. And I felt that created a really satisfying kind of gameplay because it made you think urgently and made you kind of stretch other mental muscles that you
normally
wouldn't.
Which came first? Did Dead Space come first, or did Resident Evil, was it the one you're talking about, 5?
Dead Space came first. They did that. They
did that. Was that the first game to do that, where you had to manage inventory in real time?
I don't know enough about video games to say if it was the first one, but it was the first survival horror game that I played that did that.
And then
it showed up in 5. And also another thing that happened between 4 and 5 was that there were a few portions of 4 where there would be kind of escort missions, and this other character would come in, and you would have to control both characters to get them through challenges. When it came around to 5, you're partnered up with somebody the entire game, and then it becomes an AI sidekick.
I see what you're saying.
Mass Effect did that too.
Yeah, but except that, well, does your sidekick in Resident Evil 5 also fight?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And you have to keep arming him or her with weapons.
Stops.
And you have to keep healing them.
Okay.
And they're just freaking Leroy Jenkins every time. You're walking down the hallway being like, all right, I'm gonna look at my inventory. I've got a rocket launcher, it's got one round left in it. Then I'm gonna go to the machine gun, and it's got 60 rounds in it. And meanwhile, your sidekick is Leroy Jenkins, just runs into like a zombie's mouth, and then you have to chase her down and give her all of the health items you had left. Created a new set of challenges. And
I have one of the party members in Mass Effect Andromeda is the Leroy Jenkins of Mass Effect Andromeda. I love him to death. I use him every single time. And I was like, I'm not even aware there's enemies nearby. And he basically like hulks out and just runs. I'm like, oh, there must be enemies nearby.
Everybody's got to have a Murdoch on their A team.
What is this leading up to?
This is leading up to, I'm going to tell you about what I just played during the break, which was Resident Evil 7.
Yeah.
Resident Evil,
really like this game.
I cannot say enough good things about
it.
Now, I'm a Resident Evil apologist. I like it when it's bad. Actually, that's not even true. I never finished Resident Evil 6 because, like most great survival horror games, as the series progressed, it got farther and farther away from survival horror and, you know, limited ammunition, limited health items, atmosphere, tension, dread, like, you know, building tension and making you feel physically uneasy,
sure,
waiting for something to happen.
Sure.
But every time they would, like, you know, the development teams would walk away from a game, they'd be like, hey, they liked it. I got this email. This kid said he likes the machine gun. Oh, well, let's put 75 more machine guns in the game. Let's make it a cover-based shooter. Let's run through a war zone. Actually, let's have fewer monsters and let's have more enemy paramilitary forces to go against. So there's things shooting at you. And it basically just became action-adventure games. Six becoming the most self-indulgent of all of them.
Is that the one where you can run and shoot at the same time?
Yes, that's when they introduced that.
Okay.
Yes, I haven't been able to mention Resident Evil to you in the past 10 years without you making some crack.
That's not a crack. That's how I they delineate between them.
Pre-run and shoot,
yes.
Post-run and shoot.
Yes. Because I've never played them, and that's the only, like, demarcation of, like, old gen to new gen that I know.
Yeah. Well, they fixed that, like, back by six. They fixed that. Anyway, so they just ran that series into the ground and made it a shadow of its former self. And then in January of this year, they released Resident Evil 7.
Yes.
So naturally, upon hearing this news, I kind of rolled my eyes and thought, great, I'm going to jump out of a helicopter onto a jet ski, and then I'm going to fight a Russian army, and then maybe a zombie's going to jump up during the credits. They went as
they took it 360,
far away
yeah.
from what it was to a place where it worked. First of all, they went back to the original, the roots of having survival horror.
Yeah.
You walk around this game.
Limited options.
You find a gun. You might not find a bullet for that gun for another 2 hours of gameplay. And when you find one, you might find one. There's very limited health items, very limited ammunition, limited weapons, limited space to carry those weapons. Tons and tons of tension and atmosphere designed to, like, really immerse you and just make you start white-knuckling before anything happens
to
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, they made it a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
Which, I've never been a fan of first-person shooters. They've always made me...
That's true.
I like over the shoulder.
Yeah.
It worked so well.
Oh.
And this time, instead of you going up against a quasi-paramilitary organization who's got the secrets for an evil virus that's going to mutate the world into monsters.
Yes, yes, yes.
You actually spend the whole time on a dilapidated plantation in the South. You're a man
yeah.
looking for
yeah.
your presumed dead wife. Now, I know that sounds a little bit like the premise of Silent Hill 2, but hear me out. and then you go down there and you find this terrifying family of rednecks called the Bakers.
Right.
And they live on this sprawling, crumbling plantation. And in there, it's just horrible imagery, horrible things to kill.
Is it great
puzzles? Could you've done with some more puzzles? But that's been one of the great things of the Resident Evil series is the item management, the tension, and the
puzzles.
So the puzzles were excellent. There's already a ton of DLC for it. I've already finished the game once. I started a second playthrough, and I've played through all the DLC. It's just excellent. I was really genuinely terrified during so much of the play in the fun way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had a moment when I first started playing it where something really kind of scary and freaky happened, and I was like, I don't think I can play this. There was a few years ago I had to stop playing horror games because I was like, these are supposed to be an escape for me, and all they're doing is creating more anxiety for me.
Yeah.
And I had a moment at the beginning where I was like, I don't know about this, but I soldiered through that moment, and it paid off being the most rewarding game experience of the last many, many
years. Wow, I've never heard you speak this passionately or eloquently about a game in a long time.
I'm always disappointed. I always get a game and I get excited about it for like the first several hours of gameplay.
Yeah.
And I usually don't even finish it because I'm like...
Well, I think you really loved Dead Space in almost the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first one, not the second one. I think the second one, you didn't...
It fell by this... It did the same thing.
Yeah.
The first one, an excellent, like, tense survival horror game.
Yeah.
The second one, a little more action.
Yeah.
The third one, I didn't even play because it was just a straight-up action game. It was basically Resident Evil 6 in space.
Well, that's pretty exciting. Here's the thing. I'm never going to play it.
I know. You watched
Ever.
Part of a video online
yeah.
where these people just watch walkthroughs. And,
yeah.
And you... I was watching it with you. There was sun shining through the windows.
Yeah.
It was obviously a video game because we're watching people play it.
Yeah.
And you were visibly uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. I can't... I am not... I recognize its greatness. I recognize that its gameplay is both unique and... wonderful,
mm-hmm.
and it's a lot of fun for a lot of people. I choose out. I can't. I just can't. I can't do it. I don't love that kind of storytelling intention.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't.
I think I just like it. It's kind of like amusement park rides for me where I kind of don't really like them, but I love the exhilaration of it.
Yeah.
When it comes to an end.
Yeah.
So like when it's pulling back the things, then I'm like, fuck, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so there are these incredibly tense sections in Resident Evil 7 where I'm like, this is not fun. But being on the other end of it, when all the enemies are dead and there's quiet and then you can start cracking open barrels that have bullets in them again, then you're like, that was really satisfying.
That sounds wonderful.
It's a goddamn excellent game.
And I'm going to have to take your word for it.
And also, making the antagonist a family of scary mutant rednecks.
Yeah.
Oh, it just speaks right to my heart. There are a few things that scare me more than rednecks.
You come from the land of rednecks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those people terrified me growing up. The only thing that to me that is scarier than a terrifying redneck is a terrifying teenage redneck.
Ooh.
That's it. That's the only thing that makes it worse. Because I'm terrified of two things. You want to guess what those two things are?
Teenagers and rednecks?
You're a good boy. Shit. Why don't you come on up the house? We're going to give you a haircut.
Oh, all right. Fuck. That was creepy.
That's a direct quote from me in high school.
Okay.
Hearing a truckload of like these guys going, hey, come up the house. We're going to give you a haircut.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Fuck.
They didn't.
I'm uncomfortable. Don't do that again.
Resident Evil 7, 40 stars.
Okay.
In the future, we have more stars on our game rating system that we never even had before.
Well, I guess if 40 stars, I would give...
How many pies are you going to give Andromeda to?
Andromeda
gets... It's Andromeda.
It's Andromeda.
Appalachia.
Right. Mass Effect Appalachia.
Oh my God, we just combined our two games.
Oh my fucking God. You're a space explorer who shoots redneck aliens in the face.
Along with your NPC partner, Ned Beatty.
Oh my God. Hashtag this is our idea, don't steal it. Mass Effect gets a whole apple pie. And you know what? Half a cherry.
That doesn't mean it. I don't know what your favorite pie is.
Yeah, that's what it gets.
Okay, that's just a little rating system for you.
A full apple pie and half a cherry. There you go.
Okay. You were saying that we were going to have to keep this one short today.
Did I?
You were starting to say something like
that. I guess
so. Well, we're not going to do that yet because I got something else I got to talk about. Was that really all you wanted to talk about was just Mass Effect? That's
literally the only thing I care about in the past 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
You didn't care... that there is a swelling iceberg of evidence to link the Trump campaign to ties with Russia, which is treason. And he's still in office moving an armada of nukes to North Korea. We're actually just saying on Twitter that he is, and he didn't really do it. How has this only been 4 months?
You know what I love about Batman?
What? There's really not that much to love these days other than Lego Batman.
That he can be interpreted any way we want. That's what I really love about Batman.
That's kind of a stretch. He's pretty one-dimensional.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay.
I saw the new Justice League trailer.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah, how does that feel? That this thing that you are now seeing is being met with apathy. First of all, that you watched the trailer.
I did watch
the trailer. Like, not because you're so excited about it that you're on media blackout, which is what you normally do with things that you care about.
Oh, absolutely.
That you're sitting there going like, I guess I'll watch the Justice League trailer. Like, you have been a passionate Justice League fan your whole life.
Pretty much.
That is where our shared passionate Batman fandom deviates. And then I've never given a shit about
the Justice League. I don't care
about the supernatural parts of the Batman universe. And you're like, fuck yeah. Like, Batman is like basically running neck and neck with Flash for like your favorite superhero.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the fact that you are seeing the Justice League trailer and being like, nah.
I don't care. I literally don't care. There is nothing about that trailer that excites me. Nothing. Not a single solitary thing.
There's one funny line in it.
Which one?
Bruce Wayne and Flash are getting into the Batmobile.
Oh, what's your superpower?
I'm rich.
Yeah, that wasn't even funny.
That's kind of funny.
No. I was like, oh, well, great. White privilege. Wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's a joke that everybody else makes online, but they've never actually used that joke.
And that's why it's horrible, because they're telling a bad joke on purpose.
Maybe it was because the rest of it was so joyless.
Why are the live-action films so fucking gray and overcast? Why?
Well, they're not when they're all red and yellow because everything's on fire.
Well, But yeah, I don't care. I want, and again, it's one of those things, like, I love Batman beyond all reasonable expectations that should be allowed by any other human being on the planet. I love Batman. I want to love Batman things. I want to consume them. I want to give people my money to enjoy Batman things.
Yeah.
I don't care about this movie at all.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's the first time I've ever said something like that about, maybe not, but like, I don't know.
You know who the villain is in this movie?
Who?
You don't know.
Oh, they're fighting, I believe it's Darkseid or Apocalypse.
No.
Who's the
villain? They had that like sort of flash forward, that like vision in the last movie to make us think when we saw like the Omega symbol on
there. Oh, then who's the...
We thought it was going to be Darkseid.
Who's the villain?
Oh, no, I think they're probably saving Darkseid for Justice League 2.
Oh, then who's the villain?
Steppenwolf.
Oh, it's still Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah, it is. He is, but still like... Fucking bottom tier, man.
Yeah, he's a D-lister. He's a D-list villain.
How about something we've never seen on screen before in live action? Like, I don't know, Brainiac.
Brainiac would be cool. Fuck, I would even take a Vandal Savage, to be honest.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, okay. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
But Steppenwolf, okay. But then now that here's the problem. It's like you can't tell the story of Apocalypse without telling the story of the New Gods, which means it's going to be an even more complicated movie than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And they're also going to do, like, you know, an origin scene of every single hero, which means the first third is going to be exposition, and here's who the Flash is, and here's who Cyborg is. It's like, I don't care!
Yeah, it's going to be bad.
I don't care. I want to care.
I would like to, I guess, kind of care. I would like to be surprised. But when they keep putting out trailers like that, and Marvel puts out trailers for Spider-Man Homecoming and Thor, Rick and Nakaroli, those two trailers are just sick as hell.
Thor, Ricky Tikki Tavi?
Yeah. Thor, Ragu Sauce with the Hulk plant.
Thor, Rick Rolls the audience?
That trailer is fun and exciting and funny. And, and the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer, it looks great.
Even the Star Wars teaser is... They don't show much of anything, and that got me more excited for a movie than the full Justice League trailer.
And sure enough, Star Wars fans came out en masse to complain about that on the internet.
Of course they did.
It's a teaser. I know that by this time last year, we'd already had a teaser, and we got the first full-length trailer. But
who cares?
Who cares?
I don't give a fuck.
That doesn't mean that this is no longer a teaser.
Yeah.
Star Wars Celebration in Orlando gave us tons of sneak peeks. Before we talk about that trailer, they also gave us a trailer for the final season of Rebels.
I don't know what that is.
Star Wars Rebels.
What is
it's
that?
On, it's a Disney,
is that a thing?
It's a Disney cartoon.
It's a cartoon?
Yes.
On the TVs?
On Disney XD.
Okay.
It takes,
so I need cable to watch it?
Think so. I don't know what they have a streaming service.
Do they have a streaming service? Because I don't have cable.
It's an animated series. It's a band of rebels. And the
is
movie,
it like Clone Wars, the animated series?
Kind of. It takes place between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope.
Oh, interesting.
So
you get some
original trilogy characters.
Oh, kind of like the Clone Wars did.
Clone Wars was between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith.
Okay, got it.
And it's a lot like Clone Wars in that when Clone Wars first came out, they released the first three episodes of that as a 90-minute feature, and they put it in theaters.
Right.
And it was garbage.
Yeah.
It was stupid,
not good,
goofy fart jokes.
Yeah.
It was dumbed down from something that was already dumbed down from, like, Attack of the Clones.
Exactly.
And it was just
good point.
Stupid kiddie toy commercial, and it was garbage.
Yeah.
And so I checked out. I'm not watching this. Lightsaber sound effects, that's not enough to keep me on board.
That's too bad.
So I didn't watch it. A couple seasons passed, and then everybody who I'm friends with, specifically our good friend Lucas Siegel, is always saying, like, man, you gotta watch Clone Wars. You gotta watch Clone Wars. And I'm like, everybody has to be high on bad drugs because there's nothing interesting about it. But then I finally gave in and I went back and watched it.
I think I watched the entirety of it before you did.
I was wrong
because
it got gritty. It showed what war looks like.
Yeah.
There were
actual consequences for actions.
By the time they got to like the fifth season, they were just showing off. What can we do to make this cool? I got an idea. We're going to have an episode where the character Jar Jar Binks is going to be trying to protect his lover. And to protect his lover, he's going to punch a child in the face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we put that in a cartoon?
Sure.
Sure. Was anybody going to believe it? I don't know. Let's put it in there. And then I watched it and went, oh, look at Jar Jar go. Rebels did the same thing. It was the first season, so it was once Disney got the IP, the entire Star Wars universe, and they were like, we're going to do this animated series. So, like, here's our little band of rebels, and we got a monster, and we've got like a pilot and a thief and a couple Jedis, and we got a robots and blah, blah, blah. It was all like very colorful. I thought the character designs looked really stupid. I liked that it was in a universe where like Mos Eisley and Stormtroopers existed.
Sure, sure, sure.
But still, I watched like a few episodes and like wasn't into it and kind of checked out and came back. And they did the same thing. It just started getting darker and expanded so much Star Wars mythology in such a beautiful way.
Oh, really?
Set up stuff that is being called back in the new movies, in Rogue One.
Wow.
Like, it's all part of canon, and it's excellent. It really enriches that universe. And
wowzers.
So there's going to be a final season of it, and Star Wars Celebration released a trailer for that final season. It's amazing.
Oh, good.
I'm excited.
I may have to find it, because I don't have cable. I mean, I'm going to need to find a way to watch it that's not... Disney.
Excellent. Star Wars Celebration also released a trailer for Battlefront 2, the video game,
which I just watched with you right now.
That game.
I want to go before you go into that. I want to say that I played Star Wars Battlefront with you.
Yeah.
It's one of the first games I played on the PS4 that you got me for Christmas that year.
Yeah.
And I liked playing with you. I liked the thrill of some of that combat, but ultimately I got very bored very quickly.
There's no single player campaign.
There's no content other than what you create in multiplayer.
You can just test runs of various levels and mechanics, or you can go play with a bunch of German teenagers online who are going to murder you in a second. Yeah. So yeah, it was kind of disappointing, and that was the big complaints, that there wasn't a single player campaign. Well, EA heard your call and they put a single player campaign into the new one, and they released a narrative game trailer for the new one.
Looks really good.
The trailer for that game is like the best trailer for a Star Wars movie I've ever seen. I want to see that movie. It looks sick.
I love the idea of you playing as an Imperial soldier.
Yes. I love the idea of the chief protagonist of the game being another woman.
Yeah.
Because
I love that.
Because I got to see a bunch of fuckboys shit their pants on Facebook when that trailer came out, and people were not Facebook, but just anywhere else in the universe where there's a comment section.
Right.
To be crying that, like, it suggests that you are playing this Imperial soldier after the fall of the Empire and who's a woman, and to see like comments of all these angry boys being like, ugh. What is going on? Why do we have to have another female protagonist? Like Force Awakens and Rogue One wasn't enough. Now they're all going to be women. Are we ever going to get any characters that we can identify with?
Oh, geez.
That's an actual comment that I read.
Shut the fuck up.
Which is like a contender for an award winner for least self-aware comment ever made.
Yeah.
Which all that did was make that trailer even look better to me.
Yeah, so, no, knowing that that pissed off a shit ton of assholes.
Yes.
Then that trailer is genius.
So thanks, you fucking crybabies. I hope you don't play it, and I hope you rob yourself of the experience of joy, because you're totally not sexist. But anyway, the third trailer was the first teaser that we got for The Last Jedi, Star Wars Episode 8.
Yeah.
And it's a teaser, and it showed even less than I was expecting it to show. Yeah. And what am I going to say?
I'm still excited.
It looks amazing.
It does. It looks beautiful. It's beautifully shot. That last line about how the Jedi Order must end or die. I forget the actual line.
It's time for the Jedi to end.
Yeah. It's just that, to me, speaks far more volume and far more depth than that fucking Justice League trailer could possibly ever dream of creating.
Yeah.
That one line alone is worth it to me.
Yeah.
To hear Luke Skywalker say the Jedi must end, to me, is a far more compelling, like, as far as I'm concerned, ta-da, Star Wars, more depth and complexity than Justice League, says Nelson Lugo of the Epic Podcast.
Man, if only we were famous and we could get blurbs on posters.
Oh my, we should just create our own memes with blurbs on posters. Actually, you know what? If you're a meme creator, by all means, use Says Nelson Lugo of the Epic Podcast.
I like how much they are enjoying teasing us, Luke Skywalker, because the last movie,
all you got was that one shot.
You got to see him, but you didn't get to hear him.
No.
And the new trailer, you get to hear him, but you don't really see him. So
no. It's like there's something really warm and comforting knowing that this is the story where Luke is going to train Rey, you know, or at least that's what we get. We get the idea or the hint that he's training Rey.
Yeah.
And to me, like, the full circleness of that is so warm and comforting and just feels good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Still remember when he was just a snotty little fuck boy on Dagobah.
Little whiny punk kid.
Oh, this is taking too much time. And Yoda was like, I'm going to go to Tossie Station
and pick up some Balrogan murder.
Yoda's like, oh, you having a hard time? I'm going to blow your fucking mind. Hey, go walk in that little cave there. Because you're about to have the craziest Jedi acid trip.
I want to see Rey's Jedi acid trip. All right, I guess we got a hint of that already.
Oh, we're getting more of that.
I want to get more of that.
I think we saw the tail end of it in the trailer.
Really?
I suspect that starts at the end of her second vision.
Ooh.
But I don't know shit about anything. What do I know?
You know stuff.
I don't really.
You know things. You know stuff and things. What else do you want to talk about?
Oh, one last thing that I think I should throw in is that I feel that going forward for our loyal listener, by the way, quick shout out to you,
C. Muldrow.
Going forward, I feel I should brace you for...
Brace me?
Future...
For what?
Future episodes of this podcast.
Okay.
Future content on this podcast.
All right.
And that when we hit that pause there at the beginning of the episode,
sure.
I got very deeply into professional wrestling.
Wait, are you a wrestler now?
I am not a wrestler.
Oh, okay.
I'm just...
Then I don't give a fuck. What are you going to say?
Oh, I'm a huge fan. But I feel like going forward, episodes of this podcast, yeah. When we're like going, hey, Batman, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Mass Effect. By the way, we got to talk about what's going down at SummerSlam. I feel like that's going to be a thing I'm going to be discussing.
Does this mean... Well, the thing is, it's going to be a really one-sided conversation if I don't partake in this.
Really?
Yeah.
How much did I interject into that conversation about Mass Effect?
Quite a bit.
I just asked questions to push this along because we didn't have a guest, and I'm trying to sharpen my skills for next month when we do have a guest. Look, I got really into professional wrestling. I'll make this quick. I was really into professional wrestling when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
When I was, I don't know, 15 or whatever, when I discovered weed and punk rock, that's when I lost interest in it. And then I didn't watch
it. You know, that's the natural course of things.
And then I didn't pay attention again.
Uh-huh.
For 26 years. That's, I missed out on The Rock. I missed out on The Undertaker. I missed out on the Attitude Era, the NWO, WCW, Eric Bischoff, all of that shit. All of it. I missed out on all of it. Didn't care. It was this background thing.
You just streamed a litany of names that don't... I have no idea who these people are.
C. Muldrow knows. So I missed out on all of that. But I had been talking a great deal to my partner, Bunny Buxom, about how much I love professional wrestling and how I think she would love it because it's very much, it's athleticism, but with the pageantry of burlesque combined and crazy, goofy, cartoonish storytelling, that it would be fun. So she surprised me for Christmas, got me tickets to go see a house show at Madison Square Garden.
I remember.
It was amazing. And then the next week watched Raw and SmackDown, and that was it. And now
it's snowballed from there.
Yep. I'm watching pay-per-view events. I'm following.
That's true.
I'm having conversations
what is that?
WrestleMania.
I watch WrestleMania with you.
I've got like a little community of other wrestling fans online that we discuss the days after Raw and SmackDown, what they're doing with the property. And I am really like unapologetically, unironically, unguilty pleasurily.
Yeah.
Into it.
Oh.
I'm just surprised how much it got a hold of me and how quickly and how tightly after, you know, 26 years of like adulthood.
Sure.
That it just sucked me in. At first I was like, oh, this is overwhelming. I don't know any of these names. Well, I can tell you about all of them now. So just expect if we have to do that, if we have to relegate a 1 minute corner of every episode.
Sure.
So
no,
we'll call it Wrestling with Schaefer.
Yeah, we've got What's Bothering Schaefer. We've got the What's Bothering Schaefer minute. We've got the Wrestling with Schaefer minute.
Or it's just going to be really fast. Samoa Joe and Nia Jax deserve belt, and what are they doing with Roman Reigns? Thank you.
Was that your minute? Was that the thing you wanted to say?
There was more in there, but you must have blanked out during it.
Okay.
Your eyes got a little glossy. I saw my reflection in them, and that's why I cut it short, because I didn't want to actually put you in a coma. Our first month back.
That's true. Well, thank you. I do. That's very kind.
Anyway, just a heads up going forward. I'm going to probably be hollering about wrestling on this show.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm thank you for the heads up.
You're welcome.
For the warning.
You're welcome.
You've never needed to do that before with anything you're particularly passionate about. But
there's still a little bit of a self-conscious thing that comes with it. I'm still a little
with
bit...
With you, like you feel like self-conscious.
Yeah, okay. It's like I'm really into it. But yeah. When you get people who are like not wrestling fans and you like want to go all in on it, it's like it's similar to any feeling I've ever had, like where I'm talking to civilians and I get really into obscure details about Star Wars. I'm like, ooh, I should let you know I'm really into Star Wars, and I tend to go on tangents about it. But wrestling, it holds a little bit more, because when I was last a fan 26 years ago,
sure,
I was even a little self-conscious about it then.
So it's a carryover.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have no reason to be. I'm an adult. I can do whatever the hell
of course,
I want.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's still this part where I'm still kind of like, yeah, I'm really into wrestling.
I literally don't care. You can talk about whatever the fuck you want to talk about.
Good. They really don't know what the fuck to do with Roman Reigns.
I won't understand a word you're saying.
Shout out to Alexa Bliss, who just moved over to the Raw roster. And she's number one contender to take Bayley's Raw Women's Championship title at Payback at the end of the month.
That's a thing. I hope she gets the payback she deserves. Was that it? Was that all you wanted to say? You wanted to say more? You might as well just get it out now.
I'm also working on a mixtape.
A mix? Oh, that's right.
Working on a mixtape. Got some new songs coming.
This the Junk Drawer 2 you've been talking about?
It's not really going to be Junk Drawer 2 now. Now it's going to be more of a proper mixtape.
Oh.
In that it's not just going to be stuff I've unreleased. It's going to be stuff that I'm writing for it, but I'm just writing it over a lot of copyright infringement. So it'll be a free record, but it'll be like a continuous mix of a bunch of music that I don't have the rights to, that I'm gonna write rhymes to, because I've never done a proper mixtape. And my friend Vince Vandal said this thing at a show in Baltimore that just stuck with me.
What's that?
Where he said, I really feel like every rapper should do a mixtape at least once.
And his reasoning was?
He doesn't really need one. He's right. It's kind of like just...
Well, what's the thought behind it, I guess, is the question.
You know, every rapper should do a full-length record. Every rapper should do a bunch of guest appearances. Every rapper should do... maybe release an EP.
Oh, I see. So this is like the checklist of things that you as an artist should probably experiment with.
Yeah, I mean, and like young rappers now, you start with a mixtape and then you work your way up. So I'm kind of going backwards because I never followed that business model.
No.
But he said the thing and he was like, everybody should have a mixtape. And I'm like, you know, you're goddamn right. Everybody should. And I've never done one. And I've got a bunch of songs lying around that I was collecting for this second collection of unreleased stuff called Junk Drawer 2.
Sure.
But they're all already over copywritten music. So why don't I just keep following that path and turn it into a mixtape?
Yeah.
Because I've never done one and it's never too late, I guess.
Oh, fantastic. No, I'm excited. Do you have I know what the answer is going to be. Do you have like a deadline for this?
Eventually 2017.
Yeah, there we go. Which basically means eventually 2018.
Right. And hopefully before the end of 2017, that new Schaefer, Riley, and the Double Ice Backfire record will be out too.
But yeah, you just released a single from that.
No, we didn't.
Oh.
That is a song called I Hate People that is going to be on Vince Vandal's new album
where
he just creates beats and he brings in different MCs for all the tracks. It's called Advanced Friends and Fandom.
That's funny.
His first one was just called Friends and Fandom, and that had that song that I wrote about Damian Wayne on it.
Got it.
So I Hate People is going to be on Advanced Friends.
That's a really good song, by the way.
Thank you very much.
I enjoy that one quite a bit. Okay. It's like a theme to my life.
I that's what I was going for.
Yeah.
I wanted everybody to have their own, you know, pep rally song for all the rest of us who hate everybody else.
Right.
And maybe I'll have some sneak peeks of some of that material on next month's episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But not this one, because I'm sick of it already. Okay.
All right. No problem.
I hate this world.
Okay. That's a thing.
What about you? Got anything else you want to holler about?
Probably, but it's all like dumb stuff.
Cool.
We're winding down, and so I don't want to add any sort of big conversations to the mix, but you know, I'm slowly sort of questioning, you know, social media's usefulness. I think I'm pulling away from Facebook slowly but surely.
Good.
And
you are high on the top of the list of people that I think would benefit from doing that.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Any specific reason why, or just because?
Well, I think everybody would benefit from it, because I think it is where communication goes to rot. Human interaction is this obscene parody of itself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
that makes
sense. And I see that the people who grow more and more miserable with it are the people who grow more and more morose and everything is just under the surface is like a cry for help.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like you've always been a little bit like that with the way you use social media. But lately, it's been your corner of the internet's been real fucking grim.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like it's not to say that it might not be coming from a legitimate place, but I think that those feelings are almost certainly exacerbated by the experience of putting them on the internet. What used to be kind of a cathartic,
getting
them off your chest, now is like measured with anxiety when it's not getting the response that you wanted.
Exactly.
Or that you have to end up fighting with people who miss the point or try to turn it into a comedy open mic, and it just makes it all worse. You were okay managing it by yourself.
Yeah.
You thought putting it out there was going to help you like cleanse that.
And it did for a while.
But it doesn't anymore.
But it doesn't anymore.
Because it's gotten more toxic and poisonous and people use it more and more poorly.
Well, I mean, there was a point where like sharing this information was freeing in that a lot of people, you know, felt the same way and like, oh, I'm not alone in these thoughts. And,
exactly.
And we can commiserate and support each other in that way. And there was a long chunk of time where everybody was basically trying to out impress each other with how wonderful their life is.
Oh yeah.
And there was a tiny contingent of people like, you know, no, this is a real thing I'm saying. And these are real feelings I'm having. And it was a breath of fresh air from this contest of, you know, who's happier, or rather, you know, this contest of, you know, who's trying to convince everyone who's happy. Mm-hmm. And now it's not that anymore. It's this really kind of self-defeating exercise in mediocrity. And I think I need to either take a break from social media, specifically Facebook, or at least only use it for what I really intended it for the first place, and that's just marketing.
Do me a favor.
What's up?
If you take a step away from it,
yeah.
Don't make a public post announcing that you're taking a break.
No.
That's so self-indulgent and nonsensical, and just a part of the thing that you just described.
I think if I were to do, I'm basically going to say, hey, you know, I'm not going to be on here as much. If you need to contact me, try the other things. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to make this long, protracted.
Good, don't.
No, because it's fucking stupid.
Yeah,
but I will say, hey, I'm not going to be here as often. So if you need to reach me,
that's fine.
There are other things. There are other ways you can reach me. And that's it. But I don't think I'm going to do that. I think I'm just going to post less. And the things that I do post are really just going to be show, you know, appearances and shows and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe like the occasional, like, you know, puppy meme or something. But that's it. I can't really deal with it anymore.
Good.
You know, I'm kind of doubling down on Instagram because it's, you know, it's more visual and more fast paced and less. What's the word?
Comment driven.
Yes, that's it. Less comment driven. I don't need comments. I don't even.
You don't need threads and sub threads of arguments that miss the point.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fuck that.
Fuck that. But yeah, that's basically it. You know.
Well, good. I feel your pain. I think you will benefit. I think it will do wonders for your overall disposition if you do take a step away from it.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I've noticed.
Well, I mean, I've already started doing that. I'm just gonna stop. I'm going to stop posting anything that's meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is weird because that's how I started in the first place. So it's like it's cyclical in a weird way.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, you were also saying like there was just for a long time, it was this contest to see who could like post that they're having the best, sunniest life.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's also a trend now where there's a contest to see who can post who's got the worst.
Yeah.
And how many people suddenly have diagnosed themselves with anxiety? I have really bad anxiety, which really sucks to read as somebody who is medicated for anxiety.
Yeah, exactly.
I hate seeing that so much.
Yeah, and it's like I can't even post of concern of like, you know, I feel weird because I don't suffer from anxiety and all of my friends or like a great swath of my friends suffer from anxiety.
I saw this status.
I feel for them and at the same time I feel like isolated and it's complicated. It's a complicated emotion and
yeah.
And that was met with some sort of pushback and it was like, okay, well, I'm done.
Everything's so combative.
Exactly.
Everything is such a challenge.
Everything is a cue to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like I am neither quick enough, witty enough, or funny enough, or clever enough to keep up with, you know, everyone's point of view.
I pulled back a while ago.
Oh, did you?
Well, when I stopped, like, basically challenging all of my followers to fights and having these big epic fights.
I am so fucking happy you don't do that
anymore.
Yeah,
I stopped doing that a while. And now I keep it pretty surfacey. I talk about things that I like or I share funny things. Every now and then I'll have, like, kind of one serious status. And all that does is just remind me why I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. So. It's like, I don't even post about asshole, sexist, misogynist individuals and my particular thoughts on feminism because, quite frankly, you're better at it. And so anything I would have said on the matter, you've already said. And so I just kind of repost what you do.
I just quit doing it because, quite frankly, Jesse Dangerously is better at it. I used to start fights and then like people would come in swinging their dicks around and I would just kind of like sit back and cross my arms and wait for Jesse to show up and clean house for me or Sharif.
Oh, I love
that.
Those guys are awesome.
Shout out to Jesse and Sharif who almost certainly never listen to this.
They're never going to hear this ever.
Why would they?
Yeah. Why would they? But yeah, that's basically it, you know, living life.
Yeah, me too.
I'm heading to a gig tonight.
Oh, we better wrap up then.
Yeah.
You got to get out the door.
I do.
Hopefully you have the currency that exists in April of 2017.
I think I'm just going to sell whatever, you know, the equivalent of blood is.
Oh, inflation is not going to get you much. You're probably only going to get like one Zorgnak for a pint of blood.
What can I get for a blowjob?
Two Zornaks.
Is that a lot? I don't know.
I don't know. I didn't have time to like read the currency.
All right, we'll tell you what. We're gonna figure out the exchange rate of U.S. dollars to Zornax, and we'll figure it out.
Hey, we're really glad to be back, you guys.
Hey, thank you so much for being patient and waiting all that time for the new episode. And we're back for better or worse.
Mostly worse.
Next month we're gonna have a guest. We don't want to tease it, but we're pretty excited. And that's it.
Let's go away now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the Epic Podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here with you today. And we hope that you tune in next month for an all new meandering conversation about pop culture and current events. I have been Nelson Lugo.
I have been Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Thank you so much, everyone. And we hope to hear from you very, very soon. Be safe, internets.
Take care of each other. It's a cold world out there. Thank you for listening to the Epic Podcast. We'd love to listen to you, too. So send us your feedback, questions, love mail, hate mail, recipes, and fan fiction to epicpodcast@gmail.com. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and more, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and the Epic Podcast on all of your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. You know, we did it, but I think before we come back next month and do episode 52, I think we should probably go review some old recordings of this because that intro and outro.
That's word for word. It's literally word for word how this goes.
I don't know if you used a different vocal inflection.
No, not at all. I mean, dude, you would think after 52 episodes, I would know how this fucking works. Huh? Don't sit there and insult my goddamn intelligence, Schaefer. I know my fucking job. Don't tell me how to do my goddamn job.
You know what? You're right. Everything that you say and do is right.
Yeah. I hate you now. You happy? Is that what you wanted to create? Is that the moment you wanted to create here?
The fuck do you mean now?
Oh, shit. We're going to fucking fight now. Where's Roger? I'm going to hit Roger in the face.
What are you going to hit Roger in the face? What does he have to do with this?
Because I don't know. I want to hurt something you love.
Nobody punches Roger in the face but me.